30 minutes will inspire you. High school and collegiate Hall of Famer Margo Hinton, touching on the importance of self-discipline, always challenging yourself, and the support of community. It's Give It Up with Margo Hinton on Urban Media Today Radio.
We give it up for excellence, greatness, and leadership, and where we continue to use sports as a metaphor for life. Also, where we continue to practice, once again, social distancing, and we're staying home in order to protect each other during this worldwide coronavirus pandemic. We wish all of your families health and safety and, you know, just the joy of, you know, being able to get up every day and do what you do. We also have to thank all of the frontline workers for their courage in allowing us to stay home. So we're certainly grateful for all of that. Once again, I'm here with my family on a video chat and our new adopted family, little brother. Remember, we're calling him our little brother now. It's Matt Moclair. What's up, Matt?
Hey, how are you guys today?
All right, they better be good. Everybody better be good. We're out here doing this podcast. All right, we also got my cousin Terry. What's up, Terry in Virginia?
How you doing, Margo?
I'm good. I'm glad you guys are here. Malcolm, what's up with you?
Hey, what's up?
Malcolm's here in Pittsburgh with me. We're chilling. Yes. Chilling in the Berg. They opened us up on Friday. We're in the yellow, whatever that means. I'm going to still be home. That's all y'all got to know. Matt's in Pittsburgh as well. But then we got Derek and Kalila, my cousins in Philly, and I think they're still on lockdown. Am I right?
Yes.
Yeah, so they're still, you know, I'm on lockdown regardless, but we're happy to be not on lockdown for this podcast. So this is the scoop, y'all. For the last three episodes now, this is part three, we've been talking about this Michael Jordan, The Last Dance documentary. If you just to remind everybody what it's about, just in case you didn't listen to the first two episodes that we had, it's a 10-part documentary series on Michael Jordan, the GOAT, and his Chicago Bulls. And basically, we just break it down and talk about our thoughts and how we can, you know, use his greatness in our own lives, possibly. That's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to borrow a page from his book. So we're going to start off a little bit like we did last time. We're going to break down episodes 7 and 8, which had a lot of drama. Matt couldn't. And so my first question is the same as it was last time. What's your one word or phrase to describe episodes 7 and 8? We're starting in Philly. What y'all got?
Jerk.
There it is.
MJ is a jerk.
Jerk. He went jerk. Okay. I see Matt's mouth wide open. So let me see. Matt.
There's a term for Michael Jordan that we won't use on the radio, but we all like butthole.
Okay. All right. There we go. Okay. Kalila, Phil, it's unanimous in Philly. Let me see one word or phrase that Matt Moclair, our little brothers, talk about today. What is it, Matt?
So I have a good one. I have unadulteratedly exposing.
That was a major strip down. I totally agree. Terry, what's your word or phrase for the 7 and 8 episodes?
My phrase is, there's no crying in basketball.
Ooh, I like that. There's no crying in basketball. I like it. Go ahead, Brother Minnekek Malcolm.
I would just say he's just extremely intense.
Intense.
Like, just driven, but also very sensitive person.
Emotional.
Yeah. Mm.
And you know what? Now that you said that, because I really didn't come up with anything, but I'm going to say I'm like Mike. That's what I'm going to say. Not the a-hole part or the jerk. But I was talking to Kalila about this, I think, last night or the night before. I was the same way. At the end of my games, now, I wasn't the same way with my teammates. I don't think I'll have a teammate that was acting crazy. But what I couldn't understand is if we lost a game, how are you laughing and joking and smiling? I don't understand that. Because I'm like punching lockers and throwing my bag which is not, please, nobody do that. I'm trying to be a role model. This is back in the day in the 80s. You guys were different. It was different. But, yeah, I never understood. I was crying. I was physically shook. I was upset. I was throwing my bag. And on occasion, I would punch a locker or two. So I'm going to say I was like Mike in that way. Intense competitor, never one to lose.
Win.
Yeah, never one to lose. Till this day, I'm like that. So I don't mind it, Mike. Now, some of the stuff is a little bit shaky, and we'll get into it. All right, so I just wanted to read just a couple of things that happened the last episode. So go ahead, Terry.
I don't want to be sexist or anything, but, you know, you are a young lady.
Yes.
He's a much older man. I get his competitiveness, and I understand his emotions when it comes to his father, but it's like 40 years later, he's talking about, you don't want to play the game like me, then don't play it.
You mean 40 years later?
Yeah, he's ready to start crying again.
I'm like that. Like I said, I'm like Mike. And I don't think it has anything to do with male, female. It's just, it's in there. It's in there. Okay, so you mentioned it, Terry, so let's talk about it. So the relationship with his dad. So he mentions that back when he was in ninth grade, he got suspended like 3 times, and his dad basically set him down and said, look, if you continue to do what you're doing, you're not going to be successful. And he said that was the light switch that he needed. His dad set him on the path, really, for greatness. And so that relationship was awesome. And as we know, and they talked about, I think, in episode 7, his dad was murdered by 2 18-year-old teenagers, which is, like, crazy. He was missing for 2 weeks, and when they finally found him, he was in a creek, and he pulled his body out and obviously located the murderers, the 18-year-olds. And then, to me, from that point on, I feel like he was a different Mike, as we all would be. And to be honest, we sort of have that in common, too, except I never knew my dad, but he was murdered. So we sort of have that in common, which is crazy. Now I'm really thinking about me and Mike. So my question to you guys is, as heartbreaking as that was, the scene, too, it was the 1996 champion after his father was murdered, and they played that championship. The game-winning game was on Father's Day, and he was laying in that locker room clutching that ball. It was just like an emotional, crazy thing to me. So my question is, how do you think his dad's death ultimately affected him? And then what about how the media handled it in terms of trying to make a correlation between his gambling and why his dad got murdered? Go ahead, Matt.
So I think that one of the things that we, you know, when we look back to our previous conversation, you know, you asked us what inspiration or what who in our life really pushed us to be better, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that we can really pinpoint to his dad. Regardless of what areas or how he challenged him to do that, I think that his dad, as we all wish for, you know, we want our parents to be that model in our life that we can go to, or we can look towards, mm-hmm. for a role model, or we can look towards for that strength. You know, and I think that that's something that even somebody who is maturing still in his 40s, Mike was still looking for that, for him to allow him to, you know, give him that approval.
Right, through baseball.
That's a big kind of aspect to this that we will never know how much he really, truly meant to him. And, you know, I think the media, I mean, we see how the media is handling what we're going through right now.
Right.
The way that they're spinning things. You go on different news outlets, and you know, it's just a different story every day,
and it's sad that we can't all be on the same page during something like this.
Exactly. So when you put the most famous name, you know, in a story that can create controversy, the media is going to grab hold of that and tear it apart. And you know, you feel bad for those kind of situations, but how many times have we seen when the game's over and immediately the news, the
journalists are right in the face of the star player asking them how they feel. Well, how do you think they feel? You know, they're going to feel terrible. You know, they're going to feel either happy they won or sad they lost.
Right.
So in this situation, Jordan's going to feel the way that you're supposed to feel. Really sad, really frustrated. Maybe he didn't get to say some things to his dad that he would have, that he wanted to. And it created this bubbling kind of cauldron that we later saw what happened.
Yeah, anybody, jump in.
So when he had that, I won't call it a fit when he was crying on the floor, but I will consider it some sort of a nervous or some sort of a breakdown. I guess he had been holding everything in for so long.
Right.
And after he won the championship, he just had a breakdown.
Let it out.
I mean, that's the only way I can explain a grown man on the ground crying like that. Sorry. It's just me.
That's serious, Terry. Go ahead, Derek. What y'all thinking in Philly about his relationship with his dad? As well as, you know how that all rolled out with the media and whatnot.
So, what was the original question? No, I thought it was a little different than that. I thought it was...
Yeah, that was it. So, ultimately, how do you think his dad's death affected him?
Okay, because I thought it was something about the media. I think that this was his driving force as far as moving forward. But initially, it was definitely an obstacle for him. You know, it was something that he thought that he could, you know, do on his own. But there was a point in there where he had a realization that, you know, his father is usually there when he goes out. And then at that point, that's when he, you know, he went back to number 23 just to kind of get some normalcy with it. But, you know, one thing that happened all throughout that I was noticing is that his dad was always there.
Always.
They were extremely close. They did things together. I never knew that, you know, about him. You know, that that was his best friend, his dad. So, I mean, that was definitely remarkable to see.
Malcolm, anything?
I just think that, you know, when I look at Michael Jordan, I see somebody who is like an emotional type of person. Like, you know, I see that in a lot of people like him, to be honest with you. Allen Iverson's like that. People who like those real type A, aggressive type of people.
That was a great correlation.
They're like real emotional deep down. My father's like that. He's like, he's an aggressiveness, but he's real sensitive, you know. And like I know a lot of people who are like that. And so I could always relate to that because I think that, you know, to see your father murdered like that, and the way they did him, his body was in a creek and he was missing. And, you know, his father had really been, I mean, he was a beloved person in their family. And, you know, he was a person, everybody who met him said he was just a wonderful man. And he was at his games and he was just so much of a part of his life. And I think that for Michael Jordan, it was a thing where that was his first time winning when his father wasn't there.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so he had never... And it was like a big deal to him to even play basketball because he was always, I felt like, at the initial stages, always trying to get his dad's approval. So I don't know. I just think it was like, as Terry had said earlier, it was like a, you know, everything just came out at one time. And I think it just, everything hit. It was Father's Day. It was, you know, the game happened on Father's Day. And so all that together, the confluence of all those things, I think was overwhelming for him.
Absolutely. So all of that leading into the next question, his baseball career. So he stops basketball for 18 months and plays baseball, moved up to the AA, which they said in the I think it was episode 7, only for the reason because so the media can handle the media presence that was going to follow him. Now, looking back, my thoughts were, I didn't remember him being that good. But after watching the documentary, I was like, wait a minute. They read the stats. 119 games. He hit above 200. He had 51 runs batted in and 30 stolen bases. And so I was like, wow. And everybody else had a 10-year head start on him playing baseball. Like, everybody else had been playing forever. He had a whole career in the NBA before he started even playing baseball. So after I watched that documentary, I was like, we didn't really give this dude much credit. And even the owner of the Bulls said on the documentary, he thinks if he would have continued to play baseball, he would have moved up to the major leagues. He was that good. So what were you guys' thoughts about his baseball career then and now?
I'll just say something real short. I was never good at baseball. So I think it's just amazing. And people don't realize how difficult it is to be a professional athlete in a different sport that you haven't been playing. It's like unfathomable to me that you can play a sport and go into another sport at a competitive professional level. So I don't.
Bo knows.
But he played all through, though. Bo never stopped playing.
Right, right.
You know what I mean, Michael Jordan hadn't played basketball since he was a teenager.
Deion Sanders. I'm just trying to think of different baseball. People.
Yeah.
Yeah, Deion Sanders. Go ahead, Matt. Jump in there.
So how many times do we think about, you know, during the span of our professional career, what would it be like to leave our jobs and do something that we're so passionate about, right? You know, the ability to step out of that comfort zone that we're in and mm-hmm. step behind from that desk and do mm-hmm. something a little bit different, right? And I think, you know, as we go through this conversation, I'm not going to necessarily talk about the way that Mike was portrayed as a bad person, but more of the fascination of his mental perspective of things. I mean, the ability to switch sports, as Malcolm said, the ability to step away from winning 3 championships in a row, from being the best, the most well-known player on the face of the earth. A contract worth millions of dollars to go play minor league baseball. I mean, that's pretty legit, and that's pretty confident in terms of who Mike was as a player.
Yeah, for sure. Go ahead, Derek.
I mean, my whole thing with Mike, he was just a superior athlete. They said he ran a 4.340. I mean, he jumped out the gym. He was almost a 50-inch vertical. If he put his mind to it, he could have did it with any sport. I mean, he just had that will to do it.
Put that time.
And I think that was, you know, something he played probably at a high level as a little kid, too.
Mm-hmm. Terry, anything on that? His baseball career.
So, not to take anything away from Mike's baseball career, I think he probably could have made it to the majors. But his basketball afforded him the opportunity to go ahead and play double-A baseball.
True.
It'd be like me moving from an IT manager to doing what I want to do, like maybe paint. I can't afford to do that. I still got to eat. Still got to pay my mortgage, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So basketball afforded him the opportunity to actually play baseball. And the fact that he hadn't played baseball since he was 18 up until what? He was like in his 30s?
I think it was. Was it 31? I think it was 31.
Yeah. He hadn't even swung a bat all those years. I mean, that's an attestment to how good he could have been in baseball had he not gone to North Carolina to play basketball.
There it is. There it is, y'all. Okay, so we touched on it a little bit. Derek had a little bit of foreshadowing when he said jerk. It was his one word for the 7 and 8 episodes. So I'm going to read like a quote from Michael. He said, leadership has a price. So what I want to know from you guys is what made this dude different? So in he seemed like, and this is also what he said on the show, he said that when people see this, they're going to say that I wasn't really a nice guy and I was a tyrant. And he said, and this is the quote too, he said, well, that's you. You haven't won anything. He said, you can look at this and say I'm a tyrant, not a nice guy, but yeah, that's good because you haven't won anything. So what my question for you is, what made this dude different? And is it possible for you to become as great as Michael Jordan and not be a jerk, to use Derek's words? Kick it off, Derek.
Well, I mean, we're all, you know, the sum of our experiences in our childhood. I think his dad was very, very, very tough on him coming up.
And that, you know, gave him his competitive drive as well as, you know, everything with his brother. And then I think also when he came into the league, you know, he had some cats on that team, like what's his name? Orlando Orlando Woolridge, Charles Oakley. So he was around some real tough, no nonsense guys who probably did a lot of that hazing stuff that he was doing to some of his younger teammates. But this is his show, his documentary. So he could have chose to leave a lot of that stuff out, but he put it in. And that's my whole premise for calling him a jerk. You know, how he just kind of threw a lot of the people under the bus in the documentary.
Wasn't he, like, bullying them, too?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I got I'm gonna talk a little bit about that when I talk on the subject. Go ahead, Terry.
You can only be bullied if you let somebody bully.
Drop the mic, Terry.
They can't be a bully if you don't take it. And I think that's one of the things that Charles Barkley said. He said he wouldn't have rolled up on Oakley talking that crap.
There it is.
People know Oakley did that to him.
So he was trying to toughen him up a little bit. Yeah, I hear you. Go ahead, Matt.
So I think that when this part came up, you know, I really sort of sat up straight because, you know, I'm all about the journey, as I said. I'm all about the process. And I love the ability to look back and see psychologically how somebody has come to the point where they're at in their career or their life. And I think that, you know, in terms of this situation, would the Bulls have won 6 championships without that kind of focus that Michael had? Like it or not, that focus not only won them a lot of championships, but got a lot of other people paid a lot of money. Mm-hmm. An organization put on the map, a city brought out of despair of a basketball team that had no name to it. And I think that whether you like that way or not, the greats, the unadulterated great players, Belichick and Brady, you know, Kobe, these guys, Tiger Woods, these guys have a trait in them that you can't teach, you can't learn from a textbook. It's just born within you. And you know what? If they didn't have that, Michael Jordan probably wouldn't be Michael Jordan. He'd probably be a really good basketball player that maybe won a championship or two, maybe led the league in scoring. But to make it more complex, his mindset is tried to be duplicated by thousands and thousands of players around the world, right? And no one can do it. No one can duplicate that kind of passion to his degree. We can all try to because, you know, as parents or as business owners or teachers, we always look at other people and we're like, man, I wish they had the same kind of focus as we did. I wish that, you know, that set of parents would, you know, discipline their kids like the way that we did because we think that we're right. We're not on the same level as Mike, and we don't understand what goes through that brain of his. Mm-hmm. To be able to look at that, it is absolutely fascinating to hear him dissect what he went through in that stage of his career and how he still thinks like that. I don't blame him, and I'm not mad at him. I would never treat my life like that, but I don't blame him.
He did what he did. Right. Go ahead, Malcolm. Go ahead, Terry. I'm sorry.
I don't think he was a bully. I think he was a motivator first.
Go ahead.
Whether it be by actions or words, right?
Right, exactly.
Go ahead, Malcolm. Jump in.
I think he was a bully, but I think that he was a motivator too. I think that, as Cuz said, he's a motivator as well. But I think that he was the type of person, and I know people like him. I've been around people like this all my life. If they sense weakness in you, they're all over you. Like if they sense any, and I think his mindset was, we can't beat these guys like the Bad Boy Pistons.
Right, with that mindset.
New York Knicks and these other teams, if we have any trepidation in us at all. So if you can take it from me, then you'll be ready for those guys like Oak and you know, the Knicks were like the types going to bully you to death. Every last person on that roster.
Listen, Bill Laimbeer,
I mean, in the Pistons,
Come on now,
you can't take it later. That's what he said.
So Kobe's, you know, a lot of the great players, their philosophy is practice has to be harder than the game in order to really be ready. So we got to, you know, whatever we do to prepare has to be more grueling and intense than the actual event. So in that sense, I understand it. But I also realized from watching him that I think you do have to be a little tough. And I realize that some people, I don't think you have to be a jerk type of person. I'm not saying he was or wasn't. I think there's tough and I think there's someone who's a jerk.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think you have to be both.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think you have to be tough. I do think you have to be tough. I can't say what he was, but I think that I realize that when you get to a certain level, all those guys have a certain level of hardness and toughness. And I realize at times for me and other people, when you were too soft, when people were too easy, you can only go so far like that. There has to be a certain toughness. So I understand that.
I agree. Now, let me just say this, because the only couple things that I didn't agree with, and I'm like Matt, where I'm all about the journey. I'm like, it's the process. And I've always said to my students and to the players that I've coached, I'm going to give you two scenarios. You were on the bench. You got bullied on your team. Nobody really talked to you. Nobody knew. And at the end of the season, you had a championship. That's the first scenario. The second scenario is you played every game. You were in the game. You were dishing out assists. You had good friendships. You made great friendships and lifelong friendships on the team. And you guys lost in the first round in the playoffs. What team do you want to be on? And that when I talk about the journey, that's what I'm talking about. So I could take a little bit of what Michael Jordan did, right, and say, okay, yeah, you can toughen me up. But I'm not going to be your B and your Ho, because that's the stuff that he was calling people on his team.
Yes.
So that part, I'm not for that. And that would not have been an enjoyable experience for me if I was dealing with that even every other day. As opposed to every day, I'd rather not have a championship. And that might be the difference between me and somebody else who played with Michael Jordan. They'd rather have fame than have their self-respect.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's the only thing I didn't really appreciate. I appreciate the mindset. I appreciate the competitiveness. I appreciate you pushing people and even fighting every now and then. But please don't call me out my name. That's not going to be a good thing. So I just wanted to throw that in there because I feel like that's an important part of it. Believe it or not, you guys, we're wrapping up again. So I think we're going to do – it's going to be a part four. I'm just saying, there's going to be a part four. Have no fear. Philly, Khalil, I felt like you had some closing remarks on this whole Michael Jordan mindset thing. What you got?
I just wanted to chime in on what you just said, because when my oldest son first started playing football, he was playing for a championship team.
Right.
You know, I mean, they're like a little league football team in Philly, and his first year, he barely got in the game. And then they came to me. I went off, because I'm like, these kids are 8 years old. Everybody should get a chance.
All the time.
And then they had us doing these, like, paying for all these tournaments every week and going to this tournament, going to that tournament. And I went off again because they're like, oh, it's not pay to play. And I'm like, well, I think my son would rather have the experience of actually getting a chance to play.
Right, at that level.
This championship that he had no part of anyway.
Right.
It's the same, but it's a little different. I just heard the part about him calling them out their name and calling them bees and
all of that
stuff.
Bad.
And that's just unacceptable.
That's the part they should have cut out.
That should be a part of it. and I guess he was one of the people who would let him get away with it. But everybody on the sideline now is saying, oh, he wouldn't have did that to me. I said, well, he did it to them. He may have. It depends on you.
Right.
But I don't agree with him doing that. I know that he's a champion. I know that he's, you know, got that drive in him and that awesome, amazing energy, and he wanted to win, but I don't agree with mistreating people.
That's the only part that I was shaky on, and we're going to come back and talk about this a little bit more, because I feel like some people have some follow-up.
Hey, this has been the Give It Up Podcast on UrbanMediaToday.com. Thank you to my guests, Always Makes It Live. Special thank you to Trevin, Kiki, and Mr. Alan Lincoln. Don't forget, give it up and be blessed.
It's Give It Up with Margo Hinton on Urban Media Today Radio.
brought to you by Nice to Media Marketing and Promotions.